Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling and ownership, especially for real estate agents, learning from the experts. It's free land educations out there, guys. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant, broker owner of Land Pro Real Estate. Our office is at 207 East Main Street in downtown Pilot Mountain, North Carolina. We serve all your real estate needs in western Piedmont, North Carolina, and southern Virginia. Just give us a shout. We'll help you out. All of our shows are dedicated to the Realtors Land Institute staff and members. Their website is www.rliland.com. Now listen to me. I've been doing this for 30 years. I've been a member of RLI for over 20. We're highly trained in what we do. There's about 2,000 members around the country. That accredited land consultant is a designation. We have less than 700. If you're thinking about buying or selling land or farms, go to that website, okay, and find one of our agents, especially if you don't have a person, because there's no land education in our industry out there. We're it in this show. So I hope that helps you out. Hey, we'd like to thank our sponsors, LandHub.com. Buying or selling land, LandHub is the place to be. And AcreValue, if you want to know who owns the field down the road or what it sold for last year, the best place to research land and all free, try AcreValue.com. Our guest this morning is Rachel Bibble Cottrell. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, how are y'all?
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
How big is Fayetteville?
I think there's about 200,000 residents.
Oh,
right
wow.
Now. I could be wrong on that. It's not real big, but it's not real small either.
Okay, you know, we have a Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is a military base. And air,
yes, yeah. I knew about that.
Yeah, people get those confused, don't they? Say, I'm going to Fayetteville. They say, which one?
Yeah.
But I just want to give a little bit of your background, if I may, and then I'm going to turn the show over to you, and we're going to learn about creative marketing. And anyway, right now you're a freelance writer, a creative writer. Right now you've done work with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Freelance writer for the Gazette and affiliate magazines, specializing in health and lifestyles, agriculture, and what's the NWA programs?
I'm working for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, but there's a bunch of affiliate programs. So the Chamber of Commerce sponsors a bunch of different magazines in the area. So like the West Washington County Guide is one of them.
Okay.
So it's just a variation of different publications that are relatively specific to Northwest Arkansas.
Right. And also, our sponsor, AcreTrack, you've done some work for them written in their university project, specializing in financial technology, content and website copy, email sequences, social copy, and SEO. Those are some pretty good guys, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I worked for them full-time for a while, but now I'm on a contract basis. So it's part of my freelance. I help them out on the acres side of things.
Well, I'll see them next week, so I'll let them know you were on the show. And good group of guys. I always like them. They've really, programs that they have, I use it a lot because our MLS doesn't always capture everything, and they've got a lot of free stuff, but for more advanced, like a specialist, I could go and find. I had one project not too long ago, and I couldn't really find any good comps in the area. It's up in the mountains, and it just wasn't a whole lot of sales. And I went to their site, and I not only found what sold, but I found what was active. So I think they actually put more on there than the MLS does and some of these other sites out there.
They do. It's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, they are, and a great group of guys and gals. Okay. And then you did something for the Clearwater Hat Company. Who's the Clearwater Hat Company?
Clearwater Hat Company is a company that's based out of Calico Rock, Arkansas. It's actually owned by one of my family members, and they did all the hats for the show Billy the Kid. They make felt hats from hand using all the original equipment.
Wow.
And so I help my sister, she's the one who owns it. I help her with a lot of the website copy and any blogs that she posts. And then I also help her kind of on the side run her TikTok.
How long have they been in business?
So the company itself has been in business for over 30 years. My sister has owned it for the last, it's probably been 3 or 4 years
Okay.
I can't remember exactly what year she bought it. I think it was right before 2020. So we're coming up on 4, maybe going on 5 years.
Gotcha. Wow. That's quite a specialty.
It is. It's very interesting.
So you do a lot of social media for her and her website copy. And what's ad spend? That's your, Facebook and advertising and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
And content generation. By the way, I want to mention your website. If you're not driving, please, you can follow Rachel and see all the stuff that she has. It's just www.rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, the letter B-C, before Christ, B-C.com, rachelbc.com.
Yep, that's my website. It stands for Rachel Double Cottrell, but...
So, how long have you been doing this, Rachel?
So I've been writing since college. I mean, I was writing before that, but more professionally since college. Got a few little freelance gigs while I was in college, and then I actually went into sales shortly after I graduated from the University of Arkansas. But I kind of wanted to get back into writing and writing full-time because I was kind of doing it as a side gig. So then that's when I started with AcreTrader originally. So I was writing full-time for a couple years, and then I switched over to freelance writing. So now I still write full-time, but it's for a lot of different companies.
Well, that's got to keep you busy.
It does.
Well, let's see if we can get you some more business, okay?
Hope so.
Especially for you realtors out there, real estate agents out there that are brokering land and your description, especially, and even your captions of your beautiful photography. I have someone that helps me. I'm not a great writer, and here's a tree, there's a stream, but you get Rachel to do it, and she'll talk about the leaves on the tree and the bark and how pretty it is and what it smells like, and the babbling brook and the critters
there's,
in the brook.
There's kind of an art to writing like a listing description so that the potential buyers are kind of imagining the property just when they are first introduced to it through that listing description or even a brochure.
Well, if it's done right, Rachel, you can close your eyes and let somebody read the description to you. You can visualize the property if it's done right. And that's real important. So I'm giving Rachel a shout out here. Go to her website, and we'll give you some contact information here later, and it'll be on our website and Spotify and Podbean. So check her out and see what she's all about. Because I tell you, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words, but 1,000 words can be better than the picture. I just thought of that. That's pretty clever. Anyway, so you adapt in search engine optimizer. A lot of people are not real sure what that is. Can you give us a little overview?
So it essentially, when you go online and you Google something, you want your content to be the first thing that pulls up whenever someone Googles a question surrounding like real estate. And so search engine optimization, it's just a way that you optimize titles and even things as small as like the word count so that hopefully you start charting on Google, if that makes sense. So like if I wrote an article about a piece of land, ideally I would want for someone to be able to Google land in that area and then my article be one of the first things.
I got you. That's very important, isn't it?
It is.
And Google, over the years, they keep changing the, what they call logarithms, the way you... No, they keep...
It's a constantly evolving thing. So the internet, everything's changing all the time.
So well, that's why someone needs a professional like you. I can't keep up with that stuff. I didn't even know what it was. But that's pretty cool. Advanced in Microsoft Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. Those are pretty standard stuff. If you're in business, most people know about that. But you probably know where to go and do a little bit of extra stuff, I'm sure, that I wouldn't be able to find. I was trying to download. I've got a class coming up in my 4-hour class, Introduction to Land Brokerage, the only land class in North Carolina and the only one I can find in the damn gum nation for CE credits. It's a shame. There's just no land education. But I was updating our forms, and I didn't know how to do it, so I had to call a friend of mine. And, he spent an hour trying to figure it because he does the stuff for the banks, and it's different languages and stuff. So, but anyway, we got it all worked out, so hoorah. I can get those manuals out to my future students. Advanced in Google Docs and Google Excel. What's the difference in the
two? I do most of my writing actually in Google Docs. To me, it's easier, especially when I'm collaborating with other people. So let's say I'm writing something for a broker in particular, and he's wanting to send me some updated information on it while I'm writing. You know, he could just go drop that into Google Docs, and we could work off of each other. So that's why I use Google Docs.
Wow, that's great. I didn't even know about that.
It's easier to collaborate.
Yeah, okay. And of course, Google Excel, how is that different than the regular Excel program?
It's really similar. I mean, you can have multiple people in the document at once, which would be helpful. And I would say that that's the main difference.
Gotcha.
But it's extremely similar to just Microsoft Excel.
Okay.
There's a couple differences, but it pretty much functions the same.
And proficiency in social media ads and ad spend. What's your proficiency?
Yeah, so I do the ad spend for Clearwater Hat Company. So, you know, I haven't done just a ton of ad spend on myself right now. On my rachelbc.com, my portfolio website, my freelance writing, I kind of go by RBC, but I haven't done a whole lot of just promotion there. But I have done all of the ad spend for Clearwater Hat Company. So just, you know, figuring out how much is a feasible amount to spend on your social media ads, and then writing the copy for the ad so that it actually generates some organic traffic and gets the click rates, you know, are a big deal, you know, trying to get more people to click on the content and move on into her website and then order a hat.
I'm sure it works. Does the starting with the letter A have anything to do with it? Or is it, it's just the way you compose it? Does it, like, starting your first word with the letter A? I'm just being silly here, but just curious. Does that have anything in terms of ratings, or it's your?
No, that's just the way I have composed it.
Okay. Composition and word count, I guess.
Yes.
And then task management and software. What is Asana?
Task management software. It's just a TMS system. It's kind of a system that helps you organize your work. It's especially important for me right now just because I'm working with so many different companies and individuals at one time. It kind of gets convoluted, and I don't want to miss deadlines, stuff like that. So I would say most companies that I have been involved with, they have their own task management software. So inevitably, I've been kind of dumped into several different ones, like Asana is an example of one. But it's just so that you can manage your workload and collaborate with others within companies to, you know, get everything done. Like if I'm collaborating with design on a brochure that I'm writing for a land listing, a lot of that's done in a TMS system so that I can ping them and be like, hey, I'm done with the copy here, but I don't know how this copy is going to fit once you start putting in the design work. So if you need to give me some feedback before you do it.
Yeah, I was in the printing business for many years, and they used to have the old lug letter, but they'd sit there and lead type and then print the paper, and then it was a whole process, and you know,
right.
Spacing the words was always important. Kind of crazy. What is Figma? Your experience in Figma?
Figma, it's so when I'm writing out copy for a website, I've used Figma. It's Figma files is what it's called, and it's just a way that design can go in and, well, you know, you've got all your web developers and also design and your copywriters, and everybody who ever touches a website is involved there. And so it's kind of a way that you can create like an example website and see what it's going to look like when it's ready to publish. So once everyone gets their part done and all that's lacking is the website copy, which is where I would come into play, then I would go into Figma files and drop in all the copy and make sure it looks good with the way that the layout is on the website.
Right.
So it's just kind of a way to visualize before you go publishing a website, if that makes sense.
It does. Anyway, hey, our guest today, this morning, is Rachel. I didn't write it down right. I'm sorry, Rachel. I was looking at you.
Bevel Cottrell.
Thank you. Hey, we'd like to thank our sponsors, LandHub.com. View thousands of properties on LandHub.com. And, of course, AcreValue. If you want to know what the neighbor sold their property for down the road, just go to acrevalue.com, and that part of their website's free. It's kind of fun. They got a lot of stuff on there. All right. So, Rachel, You've got a very, very interesting background. Hey, where did you grow up, and how did you get into writing, especially about land?
So I grew up in Calico Rock, Arkansas. It's located in north central Arkansas. If you're looking at a map, it's dead center between Fayetteville and Jonesboro.
Okay.
So, it's in the Ozark Mountains, and
ooh, beautiful.
It's along the White River, and it's not the rolling plains of, it's not the delta, the Mississippi Delta or anything. But it's a very beautiful area, and it's called Calico Rock, actually, because of the calico-colored bluffs along the White River and Piney Creek. So that's where I grew up, and I kind of got into writing about land because I grew up on a family farm. It's not a row crop farm or a permanent crop farm, but, you know, we raise our own hay and we have horses. It's kind of like a little farm ranch, family farm ranch type deal. And every year, you know, we put up probably 3,500 square bales of hay that we've grown for our horses and then also to sell, and we sell the excess. It takes us probably 1,000 of those bales are used for our own horses throughout the winter, and then the rest of it is sold to account for, you know, cost of planting, fertilizing, baling, and set a little money back for the next year. But yeah, so that's kind of why I was interested in writing about agriculture to begin with. And
how many acres is your family farm?
What?
How many acres is your family farm?
It's about 153 acres.
Oh, that's pretty good size there. Can't see from one end to the other.
No. Especially because of the mountains. It's kind of in the foothills of the Ozarks, so it's
you can't
drive straight across it. You're going to have to do some winding back and forth.
Switchbacks, yeah, we call them. Yeah.
Yep.
I've never been there, but I've heard I used to date a girl years ago that was from there. And saw some pictures and stuff. I never went there, but it's just a killer property, gorgeous. So let's go back to your. Is that a family farm? How long has it been in the family?
So the heart of the farm is the Masons, which that's my maternal grandparents. That's been in our family for at least 100 years, maybe a little bit longer. But now we have expanded. So it's expanded essentially from, it's gone from 15 acres up to about 150 acres over the last 100 years or so. We try to keep things in the family, and we've had a couple loose relatives sell some land, and so then we've bought it, and now it is what it is. And
that's great.
I have three siblings, so we're going to try and keep it all together because that's what we want it to. We want it to stay the family farm.
Well, I'll give you a little benchmark. My mother's family migrated from one county to another county. The soils were different, and my great-grandfather brought his family over and bought an 80-acre tract, and then my grandfather moved over later and with his family, my mother and uncle at the time, and between 1909 and 1929, they bought 18 farms, non-contiguous, but all in the same area. And mother was one of 10 children, and at my grandparents' demise, she inherited 100 acres of a 300-acre tract that my granddaddy bought last one in 1929 for $11.77 an acre, but that was 1929. And
yeah.
We just passed a small parcel to great-great-great-great-grandchildren, and every inch of that land is still in the family. Not one inch has ever been sold outside the family. So
that's awesome. That's the way it should stay.
That's right. So let's go back to your farm, and we're talking about your talent of being able to write copy. And let's say your family called me up to list this property for you. And, of course, you're one of my staff people and helping me out. And I want you to write a description so I can close my eyes and visualize your property. You want to try that and see how it goes?
Okay, I can give you a few sentences.
That'd be fun.
Okay, so Palestine Ranch, that's the name of the farm. So Palestine Ranch is a 153-acre farm. It's a ranch-type hobby farm located in the foothills of the Ozarks in north central Arkansas, and it runs along the banks of Piney Creek, an entirely spring-fed and 100% owner-owned creek. The irrigation is essentially just rainfall, but also we have a creek and a river that run next to the horse fields and the hay fields, and we pump water out of the creek to irrigate whenever the summers get hot and dry and there's not enough rainfall. That's kind of how I would start my description, I guess.
Right.
Then I might get into saying more things about the views. You know, it's the beautiful calico-covered bluffs while you're driving your tractor through the farm. Wow. You know, I think I would go that direction with it. But yeah, just start by, I might talk about the soils a little bit too. Off the top of my head, it's kind of hard to know exactly what to say there. But speaking of soils, the soils are pretty different, like from one side of the farm to the other, because part of the farm lays right on the creek and the other part is up into the rockier parts of the mountain. So we actually grow several different types of grasses and bale different types of hay.
That's interesting.
And we've got fields that are specifically hay that we're going to sell for cattle just because it's kind of a sandier type soil, and the only thing that'll pretty much grow on it is fescue, and we don't want to feed that to our horses. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting layout.
I like it. I think I want to buy it.
I don't think it's for sale.
But I know there'd be a lot more research done, and this is just off the cuff. So, you know, these are the things that you want to cover. Any of that in the floodplain?
So only a little bit of it is in a flood zone, and that portion of the farm we don't actually raise any hay on, and we don't have it fenced in for any of the animals, the horses, or historically we've had sheep, chickens, cows, all kinds of stuff. So the little bit that does flood, you know, we kind of keep that. That's just off to the side.
Any trees on it? Marketable trees?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's pretty dense. We've got 1, 2, 3, about 5 different fields that we do hay on, and then I would say the rest of it is wooded. We hunt the land, so, you know, if we were to sell it, I would probably talk about retaining hunting, right?
Sure.
But, yeah, it's pretty densely forested. Now, none of it is anything that we plan on harvesting, but...
And it's mostly hardwoods there, right? Very few pines?
Do what?
Is it mostly hardwoods, not a lot of pines?
Yes.
So you got probably good marketable timber, so that's cash in hand if you need it. Something to negotiate or put value on.
Yep.
If you're marketing it. Are you, you're in the country, so you don't have any infrastructure. You don't have any county water or sewer, right? You're well and septic?
Well and septic.
Yeah.
Yep, it's actually an 80-foot well, but it very, very rarely runs dry. The only times it's ever gone dry is, you know, when we've left the water running overnight or something
there
like
you go.
That. And then it catches up pretty dang quick. Being right off of Piney Creek, you know, Piney Creek is entirely spring-fed. I mean, you could drill a well and tap into a spring. You know, it can, like, anywhere you want to point on the property, there's probably a spring running underneath it.
Good water table.
Yep.
Road frontage or easement?
No, it's water frontage. So, actually, on Piney Creek, you can actually own the water. Most bodies of water, you know, in the United States, you're not allowed to own because it has to be considered a non-navigable stream
right.
to own it. So Piney is actually dang near the size of a river, but since it has been classified as a creek that cannot be navigated by, like, a motorboat, which theoretically it probably could be, but nobody's going to complain about that because that means that you can own out to the dead center of the creek. So we actually own to the dead center of the creek on both sides and essentially own the whole waterway. I mean, we still let people kayak through there if they want to, but, yeah, we own the water there.
No toll booths, huh?
Do what? Say that again?
No toll booths. You don't charge.
No tolls.
And what about your road frontage?
Our what footage?
Your road frontage.
Road frontage? So it's actually on Gorby Road, which is a very, very old-style dirt road, if that makes sense. There's not a lot of traffic that goes through there. But since we've got some neighbors that do some clearing with backhoes and stuff, it's actually pretty easy to drive. Like, as far as you don't get a lot of traffic down there, but the road is kept up pretty well. You can get almost any equipment down it. I mean, we haul a 34-foot horse trailer up and down Gorby Road and don't have any trouble with that.
Sounds very peaceful and a nice place to be. You
is.
You guys hold on to that.
I would like to retire. day.
Well, you hold on to that for them, okay?
I will.
That one's not for sale, so sorry.
Unless nope, not for sale.
Okay. At any money?
Nope.
So how did you get into writing about land?
So since I grew up on, I mean, I would classify it as, I guess, a hobby farm, since we're not, like, it doesn't generate the type of money or rent that, like, a row crop farm would. But I knew that I wanted to write about stuff like that. You know, there's something about just meeting with an owner of a piece of property, whether it's 10 acres or a 400-acre tract. There's something about talking to the owner of the property and how much pride they have in their land. I feel like that transcends just hobby farms. You know, it goes up to, even when I have written about, like, massive permanent crop farms that are multi-generational farms, you know, the people are always so passionate about the land, and it reminds me of myself and how passionate I am about where I grew up. So I knew that I wanted to write about land. I just didn't know what type of land. And when I kind of got my foot in the door with my first writing job and started writing about row crop farms and talking to a bunch of different realtors, I did some spotlights on some different realtors, and it just kind of led me in that direction. And I realized that agriculture could be done on a much larger scale than we were doing it, and that I enjoyed that, and I was passionate about it. So that's kind of how I got into writing about land, and the world just kind of opened up. I started learning about capitalization rates and comps and land values and
a lot to it.
Types of farms and, you know, climate, everything there is about land. I just kind of fell in love with the topic. And I think it's easy to fall in love with a topic like that when the people who are owning the land are so passionate about it.
Absolutely. That's why I do what I do. If you love the Lord and love what you do, it makes it pretty easy. But 30 years, I wish I'd done it longer. But your first assignment, or I guess it was with Acre Trader, who is our sponsor, by the way, ironically. And I didn't even put the two together until I got your presentation. But I had interviewed Landon Fry, who's the director, and they also have two other sites other than Acre Trader. They got Acre Value and Acre Analytics. And, boy, I tell you what, that's technology. I've interviewed a lot of companies and stuff. And, by the way, if you want to go back and listen to Landon, it's podcast 171 on the letstalkland.net website, Spotify and Podbean. So, and like I said, I use their Acre Value site a lot in my practice. So it's worth looking into. So they're the ones that you were working with for a while. Tell me about some of the articles that you wrote about.
So that's how I got started. Actually, I had to do a little mock article before I got hired that was like, you know, just come up with a topic and write about it, something that you're passionate about, hopefully. And I actually wrote about my family farm and about, you know, growing different grasses for our horses, because we compete on our horses. I come from a rodeo family, so it's not just, we don't just own them for the fun of it. We compete. I run barrels. And
oh, goodness.
I wrote my first article on, you know, the finding the types of grasses that will grow that will most appropriately support your herd of horses. And one big thing that, at least in North Central Arkansas, is kind of an issue is a lot of the grasses don't have natural life means. And so I talked about that and talked about knowing where to supplement and stuff like that. So that was one of the first articles I wrote. It did not ever get published, obviously, because they aren't in the horse industry. But that's the article that got me the writing job to begin with. And then since then, I have written all kinds of articles. I've written articles about 1031 exchanges. I've written articles about asset allocation and including farmland in your portfolio. And then I've written about capitalization rates, everything in between, really. I wrote for the brokerage arm of Trader for a little while it no longer exists, but
right.
Whenever it was a thing. And I would do articles that were highlighting different realtors. So, like, we would have a realtor out of, say, Michigan, and I would talk to them about the type of land that they sold and kind of about their passions and their specialties as a realtor and highlight them. And then I wrote pretty much any article that you could possibly need, stuff about soils and flood zones, different types of irrigation systems.
Rachel, I'm going to break you up. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. But this is our guest today. It's Rachel Bevel Cottrell. And this is Let's Talk Land. We'd like to thank our sponsors, LandHub.com. View thousands of properties on LandHub.com. And, of course, Acre Value. If you want to know what the neighbor farm sold for down the road, go to AcreValue.com. So, Rachel, we were talking about some of the articles that you wrote. I'd like to know about a few more of those, give you some shout-outs. Some of them, and some of these are on your website, which is RachelBC.com, is that right?
Yes, that's right, RachelBC.com.
And so go there if you're not driving, and you can check out those. But, you know, I'm a member of the Realtors Land Institute since, 1998. And we are the land arm of the real estate industry. We specialize just like CCIM does for commercial and GRI, Graduates Realtors Institute, does for the residential agents out there. The National Association, we are what we call little satellites and quite a staff. And we've been around about 80 years. And like I said, we've got around 2,000 members, and with the specialty, the designation that we are awarded after a lot of work and a lot of money and a lot of effort is the accredited land consultant designation, and I'm one of which. I think I got mine in 2003, and I think my certificate was 1,078. So it's kind of a real unique group of people with a very specialized training. So I'm proud to be part of that. What have you been writing for Realtors? Because we have podcasts, and I just interviewed Kat, who's our new marketing director on the show right before yours, I think, or two before yours.
All right, so I actually got to work with Kat a little bit. When I was working full-time for AcreTrader, we did a little affiliate program, and I wrote four articles for RLI, and Kat was kind of my point of contact there.
Okay.
So of the four articles, I wrote a couple of them. One of them was a two-part article on how to improve the value of your farmland. Kind of went over timeline, budget considerations, you know, ROI, stuff like that. And these are still on the RLI blog.
Right, they are. Yep.
You can go to the RLI blog and you can click around and you can find those. Another one that I wrote for RLI was about asset allocation and why farmland should be included in your asset allocation. And that one actually went on to be printed in the Create Quarterly magazine.
Yeah, Terra Firma. Yeah, it's called Terra Firma.
22.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so that was with our affiliate program. I worked with Kat, which I know you know her. And those four went on to the RLI blog. So that's kind of how I recognized you when you reached out to me. I saw Realtor
yes, ma'am.
Land Institute.
You know, it's real interesting. Like I said, I've been in this for 30 years, and as technology grew, then we started getting websites like Acre Value and Land.com and Land and Farm, and my buddy Kevin May, LandHub.com, our sponsor. And I was actually got in the process with a group of people building one. And one thing that I observed back in the late 1900s and prior to 2000, there really wasn't any articles. You could sit there and Google articles about land, and they were few and far in between. So I actually wrote some, not like you. I just I struggled through. Fortunately, I had somebody look over them. But I started writing articles, and Land Flip, Roy Folt owns that, and he had started putting articles on his website. This is probably, I don't know, 1999 maybe. And now there's a lot of articles out there, and a lot of education out there, but that's one reason I do this radio show, which I donate. I've got several thousands of dollars that I pay to have the privilege of doing what I do to help people. So you're an important part of our industry, and of course I know you work in other industries too, but it's you know, we need.
Well, you know, yeah, there, like you said, there used to not be hardly any articles over land, and now there are more, but I do feel like it's extremely important because especially people that are coming into land maybe for the first time, they you know, it's a hard world to enter into. There's so many nuances that you have to take into consideration, and being able to Google that and then pull up an article that kind of explains it to you in layman's terms, I think that's very important.
Absolutely. And people don't realize this, and it's not a negative thing, but the real estate industry, 98% of the real estate agents that broker real estate are houses. And then that leaves 2% of us that do the commercial and the property management and the land brokerage. And even in North Carolina, through our syllabus to get your license to become a what we call a provisional broker, and then you got to take another 90 hours to get your actual broker designation, which is mostly on our forms and how to use those. But they'll throw up a slide. It says land is the most complicated of all real estate transactions, and then you ask the instructor, and the instructor says, "Well, it just is." And I've offered to commission several times to just, you know, do a little mini series for the instructors that teach those classes, and give them some fodder to retort, to respond to the questions that the students have. But it's just the way our industry is organized. It's like I said, there's no land education out there. And these articles, like you write, are very important. And I noticed that a lot of the land websites now have a section of articles. And I'm actually building one. I sent you the treatment on it. But I'm trying to put together a site for land worldwide. So articles will be definitely included. Books, articles, podcasts, white papers, classes. For any vocation, because there's a lot of fingers in the pie that operate around land. It's everything starts from the ground up. It's
absolutely.
It's the terra firma. You also wrote some on 1031. Did you do that for our lives? That was somebody else.
No, that was for someone else, and it was just a real high level overview of kind of what a 1031 exchange is.
Right.
Kind of talking about the Internal Revenue Code section 1031, and just deferring capital gains taxes. I feel like there's a big stigma out there where some people, when they
don't
hear
understand
1031,
it.
They maybe think that it means that they never have to pay those capital gains taxes, and obviously that's not true. Mm. So that was kind of what my article was over. It was just covering, you know, on a basic level, what a 1031 was and how you can kind of use it to navigate your first few purchases and defer those capital gains taxes.
And I have one of my friends, Matt Linville, who's with Investor Title, and I just he was podcast 223, and he's my go-to. I actually teach the 1031 part of my two-day, 16-hour class for the Realtors Land Institute called Land 101. I always get Matt, if he's available, to come in, and I let him, the expert, teach that part of my class. And I tell you what, he's quite knowledgeable. So podcast 223. Matt Limble, Investor's Title. But that's very important. People don't realize it's not just for land. It's for any type of business that you have and you want to.
Right, as long as it's a like-kind exchange.
Right, and the like-kind is misleading because people think it's apples to apples, but it can be apples to bananas and fine. And it could be multiples. You don't have to sell one property and move out of maybe an industrial site that's depreciated out and selling it for maybe another use, and then going in and buy some condominiums or buying tenants in common, a TIC we call it, where you get mailbox money every month. People like that. So there's a lot to, and that's been around for at least 100 years. They keep changing it. So every time we get a new government in there, they always want to change it a lot, so you've got to keep up on it and see what's going on. And this is the one I'm interested in. You've done several articles on hobby farms, and that's such a great topic. I mean, that could be a whole show, quite frankly, Rachel.
Honestly, it could, yeah. A couple of my most recent hobby farming articles were about some hobby farmers that are in Northwest Arkansas specifically. So
okay.
One of them was Top of the Mount Farm, which is in... it's in Winslow, Arkansas, which is very close to Fayetteville. And it was so interesting to me to learn about his operation and kind of how he and his wife got started because, farms like that, they're not multi-generational, and you kind of have to build them from the ground up. And at what point do you quit calling it a hobby farm and do you just call it a full-blown farm? Because at this point, you know, like the one I did the profile over recently, they are now, that's his full-time job. He's making a living off of that. And so you hate to say hobby farm, because some people associate that with, oh, it doesn't make money. But, you know, all farms, whether they're hobby farms or not, are important, and they're a big part of agriculture. But this man, you know, he raises cattle, and he learned that instead of butchering the cattle and selling them, you know, whole and half cows, he could take them to the butcher shop and get them parceled up. And so he sells at the farmer's market in Fort Smith, actually, by the hoof is what it's called.
Right.
And so they sell every piece of meat by the hoof. You know, it's one piece at a time, and he makes a living doing that, and that's interesting to me. I love it. I loved interviewing him and talking to him about it. You know, they do some other stuff, too. They have their own milk cows. My family, we milk our own cows. We don't raise a ton of cattle and run it like a whole ranch, but we get all of our milk from our own cows, and we raise a couple cows here at the butcher. We don't sell them by the hoof, but as far as hobby farming articles go, I think it's important to highlight those farms that are local to me, but local to anyone. And then I wrote another article over hobby farming fairly recently, and it was just kind of a topical overview on how you would get started if you were looking into buying a piece of land and starting your own hobby farm. And there's really no wrong answer, honestly. It's a hard world to get into if you're not familiar, but it's possible. Anyone can do it if they set their mind to it.
You know, there's a lot of migration here in the last couple of years, people moving from one area to another area. And I know here in North Carolina, I mean, I can't keep listings. It's crazy. I think we're number three right now in terms of population transfer behind Florida and Texas. I think Tennessee was three, but I think we had saw something like 198,000 people from other states had moved into North Carolina last year. And I feel it because, you know, you can't keep them. And a lot of people are moving out of these urban areas for different reasons, and they're wanting to have a piece of land and have some cows and goats and chickens and have a garden. And, you know, so, you know, that's something to talk to RLI about. That might be, we've got a class on agricultural, 16-hour class, two-day class, and we have one on forestry, and we have one on recreational property. But you might want to give old Cat a call and say, hey, Why don't I help you put together a class on hobby farms, which would be
honestly yes, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
that would be right down my alley.
Exactly.
I'm passionate about hobby farms because I feel like sometimes they fly under the radar. But like you said, more and more people are moving out of urban communities, and that's essentially what they're doing. They're buying a piece of land, they're starting a garden. They might get a couple goats, a couple cows, a couple chickens, and before they know it, they own a hobby farm. That's what
exactly.
They're doing.
Well, that's what it is. Yeah.
You know, if it's successful, they might actually start selling some of their produce and making money. You know, part of my family, he actually owns about 400 acres real close to ours. It's my uncle, and he is now starting his own mercantile. It's about to open officially. But they've been hobby farming, you know, for the last 20 years, and they raise their own cows, chickens, goats, pigs, and everything in between, and they have a huge garden. I even hate to call it a garden because it's not what you would envision a garden being. It's massive, and they produce a bunch of local produce there, and so it's gotten so big for them. They've had so many neighbors buying their produce that they're licensing up. They're starting a mercantile, and they're about to start selling their goods. So that's how it starts, and it can always end in an actual career if you dedicate yourself to it.
You know, something that you may want to focus on, I'll give you something that's needed. People over the years, they say, you know, why would I buy land? You know, you can't make any money with land. Well, that 300 acres my grandfather paid $3,500 for is probably worth $1.5 million right now. The timber's
absolutely, if not more. I mean,
yeah, and the timber's been cut twice.
More land.
Yeah.
There's a very finite amount of land available, and you can't make more of it. Honestly, more and more people are wanting to own it.
Yeah, they are.
So the value's doing nothing but go up right now.
But a good article you may want to play with is And I saw something in my research, I don't remember when, but it seems to me, as I remember, it was 80-some different things you could make money with on owning land, depending on where it was and what it was. But, you know,
right.
every area of the country, every area of the world, you know, has its unique things. I'd like to see a full-blown article on all the different ways you could make money on land. So I'm giving you one, okay?
Right. You could cover so many topics. I mean, you could even cover, like, these solar farms that are becoming popular.
Yeah,
nowadays.
We've done that, yeah. Solar farms and wind farms and oil and gas. And, you know, it's just, I've done 220 shows, and I don't think I've touched the surface of all the stuff you can talk about land.
I doubt it. I could write for days on it. That might be a good series to produce an article a week on a new topic of what you can do to make money with land, because it's a never-ending topic.
Well, let me get this new website going, and we'll talk to you about doing something like that. That'd be fun.
Absolutely.
So I just had pulled something. I didn't do a whole lot of research on your vocation. But what's the difference between freelance writing and creative writing? Are they totally different, or are they combined? I mean, in your opinion?
Actually, I'm going to go ahead and differentiate it from, you've got creative writing, copywriting, and content writing. Those are kind of three different areas of writing. And creative would be, you know, creating a story from your mind. It's exactly how it sounds. It's creative. Content writing is providing stories for a blog, like writing articles, kind of like what I do whenever I wrote for the RLI blog, whenever I did those articles. That's content writing.
Okay.
It's content that somebody can Google and read and learn something from, and it's supposed to be as factual as possible, you know. And then you've got copywriting, which is providing copy for, which copy just references the words that you write down, for websites or social media, headlines, stuff like that. And then as far as freelance writing goes, that's just a good way to describe my career. So freelance writers, they might do a little bit of all of those things like I do, or they might have a specialty and stick with that. But essentially, they're writing for many different companies. So, for example, you could hire me to write a couple articles, and at the same time, I could be writing an article for Acre Trader, and at the same time, I could be writing an article for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and Clearwater Hat Company. You know, I'm working with multiple different companies, and I do my work on a freelance basis, which is generally a contract. And usually, it can be somewhat inconsistent because it's based on the need of the company. So if the company has very little need right now, I might not write as much for them, but then another company at the same time might have a lot of need, and I might be pouring, you know, 40 hours a week into a different company. And then that might change on a day-by-day basis, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
That's what freelance writing entails.
Okay. Rachel, how do you charge for that? I don't need the hourly rate and stuff.
It kind of depends. I get paid per word for one of the companies I work with, and then most of the companies I work with, I get paid per hour. A couple of companies that I work with will pay me per article, but it's a little hard to do that unless you have a pretty standard format for your articles. Like, I could tell you about how much I would charge to write 1,000 words on a relatively easy topic, but obviously you can't pay me the same amount for that article as you would for a 2,500-word article that was very in-depth, if that makes sense. So
I understand.
That's where it's kind of to charge per word sometimes, but generally just by the hour is kind of how I do all my content stuff, because I have a pretty good idea about how many hours I'm going to put into something. And for those heavier articles, that's the best way for me to charge for it.
And
it's sort of a case-by-case basis. If you come to me with your company and you're needing a quote, you know, we'll come up with what works best for the exact project that you have.
So is that on your website, rachelbc.com?
How I charge on my website, just because it changes so much based on what company I'm working with and kind of
what the assignment is,
but I do have a submission form on my website, and you can go put in, it'll email me, you can put in your information and kind of what you're looking for, and then I'll email you back, and that's how you can get started.
Gotcha. That's pretty simple.
It's easy. I've also got my phone number on my website, my LinkedIn, you can click my contact me form, put your information in there too. But yeah, rachelbc.com, that's the best way to kind of get a couple examples of the work I've done and decide if we're a good fit.
So let me ask you about some of your favorite parts about the industry and why not, or, you know, what do you enjoy? Okay. What gets you up in the morning, Rachel?
So my favorite part about writing anything content related is generally it involves quite a bit of research, you know, especially whenever I'm given a topic that I may not be a total expert in. It gives me the opportunity to research that subject and just learn a little bit more, and I thrive on that. I love doing research. I love writing about agriculture, and if you give me a topic and I'm not necessarily an expert, I'm going to read the articles from the experts, I'm going to listen to podcasts like yours, and I'm going to learn all about it. And so that's probably my favorite part about writing in the agriculture industry, is getting to learn something new every day. There's not a day that goes by that even topics I do feel like I'm an expert in, I'll be writing about them, and then I'll find something new, something I didn't know. And, you know, the market's changing all the time, and so the content needs to change all the time. So that's probably my favorite part. Kind of twofold, my other favorite part about writing about land is when I get to interview farms and farmers, whoever's farming the land, working with their hands, or even the people who own the land. I love doing that. I think I know I mentioned it earlier in this podcast, but talking to people that are passionate about the land that they own, it's interesting to me to see someone just as passionate about their slice of land that, you know, several hundred miles, maybe a couple thousand miles away from the land that my family owns that I'm so passionate about, you know. There, all these little pockets exist in the world, and people are passionate about it, and I hope that more families are keeping the land in their family.
Yeah, and if they want to promote their land or promote their business, what they're doing, especially these hobby farms, Rachel, you seem like the person to contact. I would anyway.
Yes.
I got to ask you one more question. We got about 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left.
Okay.
You minored in Arabic in school, University of Arkansas.
I did.
You know, Razorbacks.
I would have majored in Arabic, to be honest, but it wasn't offered as a major until the year after I graduated. So technically, I'm only like two classes away from having a major in it, but I never went back because I'd already graduated when they started offering it. But I kind of got into that because my dad spent some time overseas in the Middle East, and he had brought home some stuff that was written in Arabic, and when I was young, I just thought that was so interesting.
Beautiful.
He had a family friend who spent a good amount of time, like several years, over in Jordan, and he was working with some horses for an Arab man who owned essentially an Arab ranch, and I found that so fascinating that somebody across the world from me owned horses and was just as passionate about a different breed of horse, but just as passionate about horses as I was. And so whenever I went to the University of Arkansas, I said, you know what, I needed a foreign language anyway, so I thought, I'm going to take Arabic, and all I needed was like 6 hours of it. So I was like, I'm going to take one intensive class, which is a 6-hour class, and I'm going to call it good and be done. And I took that class, and I'm like, I'm going to take another one. And I ended up getting about 30 hours of Arabic under my belt, and kind of developed an elementary understanding. And kind of one of my life goals is one of these days I would like to visit the Middle East and get to put it into practice a little bit. And
sure.
I'm kind of hoping that I'll be able to go and visit a ranch or something and see some horses over there.
I'm sure they're probably Arabian horses. No, they have
rodeo. Yeah, I doubt they do much rodeoing over there, but I'm sure they have sports that they do with their Arabs. So, because the Arab horses are a beautiful breed of.
Oh yeah, they are very special. Very, very. They're big horses too. What, 15, 16 hands normally, something in that range.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yep, they've got those little dished faces. I just love the breed. I don't have any of them, but you know, we do quarter horses because I'm from Arkansas. That's a pretty standard breed to have in Arkansas.
Those are great horses. I'm not a horse person, but I've always heard that. If you want to get a horse, start out with a quarter horse and then go from there. They're good training horses.
Not a bad idea. They're pretty versatile. They can do a lot of different things.
I only just had one experience when I was a kid. I don't know. It was probably 14 and 15. I don't remember. And we went to a place, you know, where you could ride horses. And the one that they assigned me was blind. I'm serious. He was blind. They told me that. And, of course, we're out, you know, walking, just gently strolling the pasture. And there was a stream course creek down in the hollow. And all of a sudden, this horse belted and just took off. And, of course, I didn't know how to control it. I didn't know where the brake was or how to turn it left or right. And it got down to that water and stopped. And I went right over his head right into that water.
So, oh, that's like off a movie.
That was the last time I ever rode one. So that was my experience. So.
Oh, no. Well, if you ever try again, hopefully it'll be a better experience.
Well, I would do it with you, Rachel. I don't know that I would do it with anybody else. But, okay, let's give you about a good minute to kind of overview and tell the listening audience why they want to work with Rachel.
Okay, well, you know, I do copywriting, content writing, and everything in between. So if you have a business and you're wanting to promote your business or even just produce content that is specific to your business, especially if it's in agriculture and land, you can hit me up and I can provide all that copy and content writing needs for you. My website portfolio is rachelbc.com. It's got a little bit more than just my published works on there. You know, I've got a write-up about kind of what I do and what I have to offer. And I really encourage people to read my website and make sure you think that we would be a good fit working together. I think it's important to enjoy the people you work with. And
absolutely.
As a freelance writer, I work with a lot of different people. So you can hop over to my website, see a little bit of what I've done, see some testimonials from people that I've worked with in the past. And, it's linked out to all my socials, and I'm pretty easy to get in touch with.
How do they get in touch with you? What's your email, and what is your phone number, if you want to get that out?
My email is Bevels, BEVILLRA, @hotmail.com. If you go to my website portfolio, if you can't remember that email, go to my website portfolio. There's an email contact.
Okay.
A little contact me button that'll take you right to it. My phone number is 870-373-2550. And if you're needing anything, those are the two easiest ways to get a hold of me.
Perfect. Well, you've been a great guest today, and I want to stay in touch with you, especially with some of my future plans. You're quite impressive. And your skills are definitely needed in my vocation, and we'll definitely stay in touch. And I'll tell Kat that to listen to our show. So, and you can listen to her show too, and you can trade off. But anyway, thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any comments or questions, please contact us. All of our shows are broadcast every Saturday morning between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. on WKTE 1090. And, Roddy, what did they do?
They can go to our website.
And what do they do if they're in Australia?
Oh, all they got to do is download the Simple Radio app.
Simple?
Radio app.
Simple Radio app. And what do you do? Then you put in
WKTE, and it'll bring it right up, and you add it to your favorites list.
Wow. Hey, you know how you get in touch with me? It's my phone number is 336-669-1405. And my email is lou, @mylandpro.com. My company website is mylandpro.com is our website. So, Ronnie, if you want to be happy, you want to tune in to WKTE.
That's right.
Because we've won some nice awards, haven't we?
Yeah, 9 years in a row being the top beach and oldies radio station on the East Coast.
And that's from what? From Maine to Florida and from the Atlantic to, I guess it's just, it doesn't go to the Mississippi, does it?
Well, it's on the East Coast.
Coast, okay. All right. And you won some nice awards. And by the way, just as on the side here, a great place to advertise. And, you know, radio is probably the least expensive cost of getting the word out there. What are we, 75-mile radius and 80-some thousand?
Right, on the air and listeners, and like over 45,000 on the internet.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's it right now. But it'll switch in 3 months.
Oh, it will?
Yeah, we'll get the new ratings out.
Oh, hopefully more, huh? Every time we get ratings, there's more.
Yeah, I know. We haven't been going backwards, so we're going up.
Must be something about happy music.
That's right. Everybody wants to be happy this day.
Well, it is. It's the best music ever made, I think. I mean, it's what I grew up on. So, but anyway, and you won a nice award.
Yeah, Announcer of the Year Award.
Well, think about that. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for being with us today. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next week. God bless you, and have a great week.